and then to half the have you have, right? And so you just keep having things. It sounds very Scientology, keep having things.
Right? You're on the rainbow bridge. I just measure everything in qubits, so.
That is a very good idea.
I use a measuring tape.
I'm landing on... Wait.
We're live.
Oh, we are?
Yes, I just went live.
Okay. Can you come? Would you come get me at the airport?
Yes, it's really close. That's no problem.
Yeah, I remember that.
What day do you land?
The 2nd.
And what time?
Should I say it?
That's up to you. I don't mind.
I can send you the info.
Okay. Yeah.
Can you imagine? Then there'll be a bunch of people waiting for you.
It's a really big airport.
No, I don't. I know. It's just, you know, it's a habit.
I got you. It's good habits. Exactly. It's not the risk of the individual action.
There you go.
It's the risk of a bunch of individuals.
Yeah, just send it to me in Slack.
There you go. And we're supposed to have dinner with with Addison Sheridan.
Oh, yeah. We need to confirm all that when and where and stuff.
Cool.
Okay. So that's no problem. And then...
Cool. But if there's any issue, I can take a cab. It's not
No, that's not a problem at all. Okay. And then do you want to Slack me when you're leaving?
When I'm leaving?
Yeah. Can I take you back to the airport too?
Oh, well, actually, I will be in Anaheim, so I don't think you're coming to Anaheim.
You're flying straight out of Anaheim?
Yeah.
Oh, so you're landing in LAX, but you're flying out of Anaheim.
Oh, no, I'm leaving from LAX, but I mean...
No, I was gonna come back to Anaheim...
on Sunday?
On that Sunday, just to say hi to people.
Oh, okay.
Because
I'm
not actually leaving for the weekend anymore.
Oh, you're not?
No, that whole thing got canceled.
Oh.
So I'll be around.
Are you coming to BlizzCon then?
As much as I can, yeah.
That is awesome.
I don't have a badge. And I have DTNS on Friday at the normal time. But I'm definitely going to come down on that Thursday, the Thursday night beforehand. Okay. And then I'm going to try to come down on Saturday.
Cool. All right. Well, in that case, we will be having lots of fun there.
Yeah. So I can totally drive you back.
Yeah. Well, yes, of course. That would be awesome.
So just tell me when.
Oh. Sunday.
That's November 6th, right?
Yes. And I'm still thinking we should do something for the election night.
Yes, really I would sure like what. To. We should.
I have no idea what we could do.
We should hatch a plan. I mean, we could do a hangout, and we could even do it on my YouTube, my Ace Detect YouTube, and then just invite, like, if we can get at least one friend in each time zone as the polls close, and then we could just kind of hang out and talk.
Cool. Is Jury going to be doing something for BitTorrent News?
I don't know. I keep waiting to find out. Because that was the only thing that could disrupt our plans is if he was doing something and then wanted me to help with that somehow, which I don't even know if he would. So that's why I've always been like, yeah, we should do something. But there's always that little part of my mind like, because I would like to have Jury on our hangout, honestly.
All right. Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, but it doesn't. I don't know.
So, what time do the polls close?
Different times. They usually close like anywhere between 6 and 8, depending on the state.
So that would mean, I wouldn't get to sleep, basically.
Yeah, it's not, the time zones are not going to be favorable for you, so we should figure that part out, too.
Yeah, I have something to do on Wednesday morning, but you know,
okay.
The election is only once every 4 years, and I think it would be worth...
Actually, the election, you know, it's is like, every it's like, year for what? Local candidates?
No, but I mean the big one, the one that I care about. I don't care about your local candidates all that much, I'll be honest.
I would assume you shouldn't.
Yeah. They're beneath you.
Yeah.
All right, let me hide.
Bye, Roger.
See, what I like about having this pre-recorded bit is I'm not nervous about the guest. I'm not like, oh, right, okay, I have to make sure everything works. And yeah, he's right there. He's a little can. Just let him out. It would be perfect if we had a better way of rolling video in, which we could. It just takes a little doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't like...
Don't you have...
I don't have
some
Wirecast.
Some XSplit or...
No, because all of those cause complications. And I have been loath to deal with troubleshooting those complications.
Yeah, I understand. I've been using OBS a little bit for streaming when I streamed. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I know Garrett, for example, swears by XSplit, but I find OBS to be much more flexible. And once you've figured it out, much easier.
Okay.
But I think the figuring it out
part is a steeper learning curve. Yeah. And then do you ever pipe video into a Hangout with that?
No. I've only streamed, and it's sort of, I don't know if it can stream to the Hangout directly.
It could probably stream to YouTube, huh?
Yeah, that I'm fairly
sure. that's always my problem is I am lazy, so I want the Hangout to do the switching for me. So I've got all these options where like, oh, you could totally stream directly to YouTube, but then you just have to switch all of the inputs. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like work.
Yeah, I think it's actually probably not worth it.
I would like to be able to do it, though.
When you factor, yes, but when you factor in the cost benefit analysis of costing your time and energy and
you
know, brain power to figure things out.
But if there was an easy way, say for even Roger to just be able to press a button and have video play in our Hangout, that'd be awesome.
Actually, maybe. Oh, I don't know if OBS does virtual camera.
Yeah, yeah. And the Wirecast virtual camera is flaky. I have messed with that before.
Yeah. All right. Well.
All right. Let's start our video here, our lazy video. We're going to talk about the election today. But don't worry. We're not going to tell you who to vote for. We're not going to recommend a candidate. We're not going to weigh in on Proposition 61.
I think we are. I think I'm going to recommend everyone vote for Snuffleupagus. Is that how you say it?
Way to get political, Patrick.
Well, I know you're a fan of the Kooky Monster.
He's but... kooky, all right. Actually, Eileen is a huge Kooky Monster fan. She's one of her biggest favorite things that she got in South Korea was this Korean beauty product that came with like a Kooky Monster stuffed animal with it.
And it well, don't get me wrong. I get the appeal of Kooky Monster. His message is simple. Mm. He's relatable.
He want Kooky.
But yeah. But
I'm with Kooky. Me want Kooky in 2016.
It's okay. He'll get it in 2020.
Yeah. Maybe that's who I'll vote for. Kooky Monster. Yeah, so anybody watching the video, this is a particularly interesting test today for the video folks because I have pre-recorded an interview with Dan Wallach, professor at Rice University, about voting technology, polling places, registration systems, precinct counting, all of that sort of thing. We're going to play that in the show. And so he won't be here, and we don't have captured video of him. It's just audio. So this, if we can do it more often, will allow us to get more people on the show, people who just can't be around at 1:30 p.m. Pacific usually. But we want to see what you guys think of it. So even if you're on the Snuffleupagus side, the Cookie Monster side, whatever side of the political spectrum you are, brown or blue, let us know what you think. And meanwhile, we also are going to talk about all the top stories of the day, which, man, lots of announcements. It's very announcey today.
Mm.
And then tomorrow it's going to be even more announcey because the Microsoft Ooh. Announcement, which we're kind of previewing today.
I didn't see that additional rumor for Apple.
Oh, up there in the right before the top stories. It's not a rumor. It's an actual image that they found in macOS Sierra.
Where is it? I don't.
Click on
no...
the second link, the TechCrunch link online.
Ah, okay. TechCrunch. Because I'm like you. I'm waiting for the...
The laptops.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get going.
Oh, there you go.
You ready?
I was born ready.
Of course you were. Silly of me even to ask.
I know.
Here we go.
Quality content thrives through the support of those who benefit from its creation. If you gain value from the Daily Tech News Show, consider joining others like me who provide support. Learn how to help at dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, October 25th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt alongside Patrick Beja, coming to us live from Finland, land of the Finns.
And of the eternal darkness. It's been, you know, my wife had been warning me about the period of around November, and she hasn't lied. She calls it Mordor. It's a very
That's a Quenya name, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's starting. It's getting there, huh? We're not even into official winter at this point.
No, but already the dome of gray has covered the country for a couple of weeks, and it's trying. I'm going to try and be cheery as I usually am on the show, but if I get down all of a sudden for no reason, it won't be because of you or the topics. It will be because of Finland.
We're going to brighten your soul with some Microsoft news, with some Apple news, and with Dan Wallach from Rice University explaining how elections can in fact be hacked news. I don't know if that one will brighten your soul. Google announced a 55-inch 4K digital whiteboard called the Jamboard, which Parks and Rec fans will find especially hilarious. It lets people collaborate remotely. It'll be just $6,000 coming in the first half of 2017 for G Suite customers. And a picture, this is not a rumor, an actual picture found in the macOS Sierra 12.1 update shows a MacBook Pro with a mini display above the keyboard and a Touch ID. Is it real or is it just a picture? I guess we'll find out Thursday at the Apple announcement. Now here are some more top stories. Xiaomi had a bunch of announcements, two new phones and a VR headset on Tuesday. The 6.4-inch Mi Mix is getting all the pundit love. It has an almost bezel-free front, Patrick. No bezel. It makes my hipster heart flutter.
You laugh, but it's cool. It's actually something we've been waiting for.
91.4% screen. It uses ultrasound for its proximity sensor, a piezoelectric speaker that uses the metal frame for sound, so it gets rid of those. It moves the camera to the bottom of the front face, and that's the part where you got to have a little bezel. Has the same Snapdragon 821 chip that's in the Google Pixel, and it goes on sale November 4th in China, starting at 3,499 yuan, which is about $516 US. Xiaomi also announced the 5.7-inch Note 2, the Mi Note 2. Yes, it's called a Note, and it's the same size as the Note, and it has a curved screen like the Note. And it's coming November 1st in China in silver or black, starting at 2,799 yuan. That's 413 US. Xiaomi also announced the MIUI VR store for VR apps and a new, its second VR headset, the Mi VR headset, for use with its newest phones. Has a motion sensor, 16 millisecond latency, a 9-axis motion controller, and costs you the equivalent of $29 US. Don't forget, Mi is spelled MI if you're searching for these on Google.
You know, the bezel-less phone is pretty impressive. You joked a little bit at the beginning.
Who knew bezel?
It is a way to we always want our phones to be smaller, right? And you still want the screen to be bigger.
You mean thinner, not smaller, because obviously people like the big screens. Yeah, yeah.
Of course. Yeah, well, that's the thing. Thinner, but when you say thin, you think about, you know, the depth of the thing in your hand. This is actually bringing, well, it's a small bezel. It's cool, Tom. Stop being a buzzkill. It's cool.
Is it small batch bezel-less phone art? I don't know. It looks really cool. I'm not going to deny that. It really does. And a lot of people are maybe overreacting by like saying Xiaomi has trumped the next iPhone, because it's got the bezel-less and it's got the camera and the piezoelectric. Like, everyone's like, this is what was going to be in the next iPhone. Xiaomi scooped them. I don't know how true that is.
Well, and if it is, it's okay, because Apple will invent it at the next September.
It's not like pre-existing features have ever stopped Apple from being proud of their iPhone.
Exactly. Google has confirmed it has acquired virtual reality startup iFluence that lets you use your eyes as a tracking device like a mouse. iFluence not only tracks what you're looking at, but also tries to determine if you're interested or bored by what you see. It also aids in what is called foveated rendering, which renders scenes selectively based on where you're looking. This is really cool technology.
Yeah, they do foveated rendering in the PlayStation VR, and that's something that a lot of enthusiasts are very excited about, because it allows you to get a higher resolution picture out of older equipment, out of less fancy equipment, because it only has to render a part, the part that you can actually look at, and the stuff in your peripheral vision, which is blurry anyway, just isn't rendered as good. But you need really good eye tracking. And some people have complained that even in the PlayStation VR, you can tell it's rendering still when you move your eye. It's just not quite fast enough. So, of course, Google would like to have this in their Daydream VR and have somebody who knows how to do it really well.
It's interesting. I didn't realize it did it. It tracked your eye in the PlayStation VR. Does it actually track your eye? That's impressive. I didn't realize, but I did notice that it does render better where you're looking. I thought it was just rendering less well on the corners of the screen, on the sides of the screen. But yeah, this is really cool. And also, being able to determine if you're bored or interested by what you see, you know, Google having that kind of technology would be pretty impressive for everything they do collecting data about all of us. So.
Oh, yeah. When you're watching a YouTube video and the ad pops up in your Daydream VR experience, and your eyes narrow, and it's like, ooh, yep, don't give them that ad again. Or your eyes get all wide and excited, like, oh yeah, that's the one, that's the stuff, serve that one up. Definitely, they're going to try to use it for that. And it's just another example of Google getting even more serious, continuing to be serious about virtual reality. Tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific, Microsoft will hold a press event in New York City. Best bets are we're going to hear about an all-in-one Surface device and more details on upcoming Windows 10 updates. Windows is expected to get two major updates in 2017. We may find out those dates. The first is expected in March. Trackpad control and customized gestures are already in the preview edition, so we'll probably hear more about that. Also expected are a feature to reduce blue light, a home hub feature for controlling smart devices, and the holographic shell. So expect discussion of how the HoloLens works with PCs, of course. We'll see more HoloLens demonstrations, I would expect. And possibly, some people are saying, we might get a Microsoft smart speaker similar to the Amazon Echo. The all-in-one Surface is expected to be an iMac competitor with a 24 or 27-inch display on a hinge that can lay flat on a desk. It's also expected to have a touchscreen and stylus support, be able to create 3D objects and holograms, perhaps have a built-in Intel RealSense 3D scanning camera so that you could scan something, manipulate it in software, and then print it out on a 3D printer, for example. Keyboard and mouse for Surface PC leaked in FCC filings recently, so we'll probably see those, as did a new Microsoft Paint that could create 3D objects. So again, creating things for 3D printers or for the HoloLens, potentially.
A lot of seemingly very cool technology. I'm wondering how much of this will be used by consumers, but it definitely seems like things professionals could use. So maybe I'm actually very curious to see what they're going to show and how they're going to show it tomorrow.
Yeah, and Microsoft is always straddling the line between consumer and enterprise. I imagine they'll have a pitch for everything for both sides of this equation. The all-in-one Surface is an interesting duck in that respect. All-in-ones, sometimes you can think of as desktop machines for your corporate enterprises, and certainly there's something to that with, you know, having a scanning ability and a lay flat ability might be good for conference rooms, things like that. But when you think about it, an iMac competitor, you think home use for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it does all of these fancy 3D renderings and IntelSense and eye scanning technologies, I'm just saying nonsense now, but you know what I mean. All of these, I'm not sure would be useful to someone who's looking to buy an all-in-one computer to check their email.
We will find out at the announcement tomorrow.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security held a conference call with 18 major communication service providers to discuss strategic principles regarding Internet of Things devices in the wake of the Mirai-based denial of service attacks on Friday. Surveillance camera part maker Xiaomi issued a partial recall of its devices Monday, and Dahua Technology has also announced firmware upgrades and exchange program for older cameras.
I should have asked you how to pronounce that second company before I did Daily Tech Headlines this morning, because that's not how I pronounced it in the headlines version, and I think you got it right. I can't tell how much heat and how much light is here. Obviously, we, in the wake of the denial of service attacks on Friday, would like companies to get serious. So getting companies together and talking about getting serious about Internet of Things security is fantastic. And I applaud that. How much of that can happen because the government did a conference call with 18 companies? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to just throw cold water on it, but I also don't want to get like, we've solved the problem sort of feelings going.
It's funny, you know, we always can see the great oceanic divide between us when we get to these kinds of stories, because as much as I dislike the idea of the government telling tech companies what to do, especially in the realm of security, I think that these things need a push in order to be made properly. I mean, we've seen a lot of these issues. We've seen them predicted. We've seen them happen. And I can guarantee you that a couple of weeks from now, a lot of people will have forgotten about that DDoS. And some manufacturers will go back to not caring so much about the admin name and password being the same on all of their devices, you know, things like that. So I do think that in the same manner that you need government to sort of say what kind of fireproofing you need on the blankets you're going to put on your kids, it would be good to at least have them look at this and say, well, these are the minimum security specs that we require for such and such devices, or at least the recommendation.
Yeah, I guess if it was a regulatory agency sitting down saying, we're going to create some security standards that, you know, maybe the Federal Trade Commission is saying you must abide by, I'd feel a little more confident. Homeland Security, first of all, obviously has an interest in protecting our borders from cyber warfare, but it wouldn't be my first choice to sit down and create technical specifications for companies to follow.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also have to wonder how much the Department of Homeland Security thinks this might have been a rehearsal for a testing, a stage testing for a more serious.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be something like that. So looks like Patrick froze for a second there. I don't know if that was because
you
said Homeland Security three times. Now you're back.
Am
Ah, and then you froze again.
It doesn't. Sometimes things don't bounce off properly. Oh, yeah. Now you're frozen.
Oh, well. We'll get you unfrozen in a second because we're going to have a new Wi-Fi standard that we can immediately switch to. On Monday, the Wi-Fi Alliance launched the certification program for the 802.11ad standard that you will hear called WiGig. The standard certifies for interoperability with other WiGig devices, as well as making sure that there's an easy way to shift to standard Wi-Fi, so kind of a graceful degradation to Wi-Fi signals if no WiGig signal is around. WiGig can transfer at speeds up to 8 gigabits per second, supplementing the crowded 2.4 and 5 gigahertz bands with a 60 gigahertz band, which cannot travel long distances or penetrate walls, but provides directional low latency connections. So it combines all of those to deliver that 8 gigabit per second speed.
So I was super happy about this until I heard the last part of the equation, which not only can it not travel long distances, but it can also not penetrate walls.
Well, it can penetrate walls, but it can't penetrate walls in the 60 gigahertz band. So it's doing a little like multi-in, multi-out magic to figure this out.
Right, but if you're on the other side of the wall, it's not going to be 8 gigabits per second because you don't have the 60 gigahertz, right?
You know what? I don't know how good it is at that sort of thing. I don't know enough about WiGig per se, but that seems to be a logical explanation. However, people are so excited about this. I think it's got maybe some other mitigating factors that allow you to get around that.
Oh, so maybe, right. Maybe I misunderstood. Maybe it chooses the one it can use. And if
this
you're
is
in
CNET,
the same room,
here are the stories that
select the 60 gigahertz band. And if you're too far, it will use the others so it can penetrate wall, but it will still offload some of the traffic to the 60 gigahertz and relieve a little bit of the other ones.
Yeah. So it's good for in-room links. And the other thing that they say in the CNET article is that because it's highly directional, WiGig signals fade fast, meaning you don't have to worry about other people, you know, sniffing up your traffic because today's Wi-Fi passes through walls and floors. So there's that other advantage to it not going through.
Well, Uber-owned Auto has completed its first self-driving truck shipment. An 18-wheel Volvo Semi carried a shipment of Budweiser beer 100 miles from a way station in Fort Collins, Colorado, to Colorado Springs without human intervention. A human driver had taken it from
Anheuser-Busch.
And there you go, from the Anheuser-Busch plant in Loveland to the way station and remained on board during the autonomous leg of the journey. That's the driver we're talking about. A Colorado State Patrol vehicle also followed the truck to monitor the journey.
Anheuser-Busch is St. Louis, Missouri's pride and joy, but is now owned by InBev, a multi-company country corporation. However, it's not really the beer that's on board. Certainly Anheuser-Busch likes that everyone's talking about Budweiser in this story, but it's the fact that an 18-wheeler without incident drove 100 miles without needing a human to intervene. There was a human there in case they needed to intervene, but they didn't need to. And I love in this story from The Verge, the Colorado patrolman is quoted as saying, like, I really enjoyed seeing him go the speed limit and stay in his lane the whole time.
You know, it's really kind of mind-blowing to me that we're already at this stage in automated vehicle. And I'm sure it's going to get old for many people very soon, for people like me to say, oh my God, we're already there. They can actually, this is not Google's weird little car driving around in its closed circuit thing. This is an actual truck driving on actual roads alone. And yes, you can say, yeah, but there are, you know, different conditions in different countries and different cities and blah, blah, blah. And this is not a car driving itself from your home to work, but it's an actual vehicle driving itself from somewhere to somewhere. And if you had told me 3 years ago this was going to happen, I would not have believed you. And I just think it's remarkable. And so it's probably one of the last times I'm saying this because it's going to become more common.
Yeah.
But still, or maybe it won't, you know, it will never stop being amazing. It's like the internet. I will always be the old dude who looks at youngsters today and thinks, back in my day, we had to drive our old cars to get to work and to get our
beer.
That
sounds dangerous, Grandpa. This isn't the first self-driving truck. There's been demonstrations in Germany. There's been demonstrations in Florida. But this is certainly, I'm going to say, the largest one, maybe. I think those have all been lorries and freight trucks rather than semis. This is a full-on 18-wheeler. Even if it's not the first 18-wheeler, it's certainly a significant step for Otto, O-T-T-O. And as you say, Patrick, it's becoming more common to see these sorts of things. Apple reporting their revenue right now as we speak. Third straight quarter of decline for Apple, $46.85 billion and earnings per share. Analysts expected revenue of $47 billion and earnings per share of $1.65. Apple sold 45.51 million iPhones, beating estimates. This is not the greatest Apple earnings announcement, but also we didn't expect iPhones to be huge sellers at this point either. So it's essentially the disappointing Apple announcement everyone expected.
Well, I mean, maybe the exploding Samsung phones helped the iPhones a little bit there, but still.
Yeah.
Decline, that's got to sting a little bit. And I'm sure there are lots of questions. You know, years ago when people started saying, oh, Steve Jobs isn't there anymore, that's the beginning of the decline. And I think that was completely premature, especially since they were doing so much better than they were doing before. I think at this stage, these questions are becoming somewhat legitimate. I don't think all of a sudden Apple is becoming irrelevant. Of course not. But they haven't had a significant product launch in a while, and their sales are declining. And it's a little bit of a concern. At this point, it's legitimate to start asking those questions.
All right. Thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We had a lot of people in our audience talking about the elections, talking about what are the possibilities. How, you know, we hear a lot of talk about whether votes could be rigged, whether votes can be counted on, and other people just wondering, can we ever have electronic voting? Is it good to have technology in the voting booth? So to get some insight into what the risks are, I talked yesterday with an expert in computer security in voting systems. So let's talk with Dan Wallach. He is professor at Rice University's Department of Computer Science and a Rice Scholar at the Baker Institute for Public Policy. He's testified before the U.S. Congress about voting security. Thanks for being willing to take some time to talk with us today.
Pleasure to be here.
So the big question that I think most of the folks in the Daily Tech News Show audience have is, what kinds of voting systems are vulnerable to an attack, and how many of them are there out there?
Well, those are good questions. First, we need to understand what kinds of attacks are we facing. We might be facing attacks against our voter registration systems, perhaps trying to delete voters who from the database, and then they show up to vote and their name isn't there. That kind of attack has nothing to do with the voting system and everything to do with the voter registration database. And of course, those are online in most states. So that's my number one concern. After that, there are two kinds of technologies. There are the voting systems themselves, the things on which you cast your vote. And then there are the vote tabulation systems, the computers that add up all the votes and give us the totals. I am most concerned about the vote tabulation systems perhaps being hacked. Even though they're supposed to be offline, they should not be on the internet, but in some places they're like, well, it's behind a firewall. Well, that doesn't really mean much against a nation state attacker. So I'm concerned that somebody might be able to tamper with the vote tabulation. And that's now, depending on the voting system itself, that might be catastrophic or that might merely be annoying. if the voting system itself is hand-marked paper, which is typically scanned by a machine, then we have the ability to do recounts, we have the ability to do sampling and audits, and we can make sure that the paper records and the electronic records line up. So even if the voting tabulation system were tampered in some fashion, it reports that Britney Spears is the next president of the United States, we have some ability to go back and compare the electronic records to the paper records and make sure that they match up. So that would be entertaining, but it wouldn't be catastrophic. Hit me, baby, one more time. Now, if we have purely electronic voting systems, which I believe somewhere between a quarter and a third of American voters will be voting on this fall, actually starting right now in many places, then the electronic records on the electronic voting machines, for which there are no paper backups, are in the line of fire. We have to worry that some sort of electronic tampering could delete or modify those votes, and we would have no way of finding ground truth. There's no non-electronic record that we can use if we otherwise reach a conclusion the electronic records are unreliable or tampered.
So the voting booth itself isn't the primary target, it seems like. It's the tabulating, and the problem isn't that the voting booth is online. It's that there isn't a redundancy to check to see if its votes got tampered with at some point. Is that close to right?
So again, three phases. In the voter registration phase, this has nothing to do with the voting machines or the vote tabulation. That's a place where we would discover very quickly that voters are showing up at the polls waiting in long lines because their names aren't on the list. If that attack happens, it will be obvious. We will know it. It'll be front page of the newspaper. So far, so good. If there's a hack in the vote tabulation on the back end, we won't know that till the evening of November 8th. When we're trying to add the votes together and we start getting nonsensical answers.
Yeah, the box scores don't line up, so to speak.
Exactly. Like, that didn't make any sense. Of course, if we are in a battleground state where it could go either way, then if the tabulation is off by a little, we might say, the polls have a margin of error. And, you know, if something is within 5% of the expected total, it's hard to say that the polls were wrong or that something was wildly out of expectation. And if we're in a paperless voting system with a tight margin, with some induced error, our ability to discover that is actually quite difficult.
Now, on those paperless voting systems, how widespread are they?
Well, the answer varies. Again, roughly a quarter to a third, I'm not sure of the exact number, of U.S. votes in this election will be cast on paperless electronic voting machines. But the really interesting question is, how many battleground states are using these systems? So I'm happy to say that the state of Florida got rid of their paperless electronic voting systems after a messy election in 2006. Now all Floridians vote on hand-marked paper, scanned by a computer, and the paper is available for recounts and audits and such. Among the battleground states, some sections of Pennsylvania, some sections of Ohio, and interestingly, they say Georgia is a battleground state this year. The entire state of Georgia votes on paperless electronic voting machines, centrally managed from one location for the whole state. And that means the entire state of Georgia, which is, they say, a battleground state this year, is potentially one of the front lines where attacks might be feasible and an attacker might want to go for it.
So how would an attack like that look? Would it be a network attack, or would it have to be a combination of an in-person approach to the polling booths?
It all depends on which attacker and what motives. If our foreign nation state attacker just wants to create a mess, then they can do that in any state by tampering with the voter registration databases. Mess created. Doesn't have to do anything else. If they want to actually cause the votes to flip in a way that is hard to detect, then you either need to get into the tabulation system or the voting machines themselves. The voting machines go through some kind of a process, what they call logic and accuracy testing, but that turns out to not mean very much. You cast a couple votes for one candidate, you cast a couple votes for the other candidate, you add them up, and they better be what you expected. It's easy to imagine malicious software waiting until it has a large number of votes before it starts overwriting and rearranging them. In that kind of a world, it would be very difficult to detect malware that was causing a very small change to the vote totals. We might never find it.
Now, if we have paper ballots, that seems to be one mitigation factor. If we have read receipts, perhaps, that could be another mitigation factor on the voting end. Is there a mitigation factor on the voter registration end?
Hopefully we have backups. In places where people vote in their home precinct, oftentimes the sign-in books are printed on paper, and it's hard to unprint that paper. But in places where they have early voting or election day vote centers, where any voter can go to any place that they want to cast their vote, those typically use online voter registration to make sure that you can't just go sequentially to each of them and vote each time. Once you've got that system online, then it's potentially accessible to an adversary.
All right, one last question. Given that all of these vulnerabilities exist and it is important for voting locations to actually look at this and perhaps provide some kind of backup that is not vulnerable to an electronic attack, do you think it's possible we'll ever be able to achieve secure online voting here or anywhere else?
I think, so when you say online voting, perhaps you're thinking about internet voting, casting your vote through your web browser. We don't know how to do that. And there are a handful of companies who claim that they can, and no, they can't. Based on the sort of threat model that we would construct around a nation-state adversary and what they might try to do to tamper with our elections, we, the computer science universe, all of the researchers and all of the technologists who build things on computers, we do not know how to build secure online voting. We just don't know how to do it. And the kinds of technologies we would need are at least a decade away from that being a reality. Meanwhile, I like the idea of voting with paper. I also like the idea of having an electronic voting machine that produces a printed paper ballot, which goes into a ballot box. And at that point, you can have electronic records, you can have paper records, and you can reconcile them later on. And if they disagree with one another, we can invent policies and procedures to try to ascertain which we think is more reliable, which we think was tampered, and we can then make good decisions. I like the idea of having copies, more backups, more independent channels, the better.
That, you know, we give that advice all the time, just in using in your own data, more copies and more backups. It just makes sense. Dan Wallach, thank you so much for taking the time to explain this to folks. If people want to learn more about this, because there's a lot more to it, where would you recommend they go to do some research?
Well, it's between now and November 8. There's not a whole lot any of us can do to change things. And if you start searching on voting fraud and such things on the internet, you will find a lot of noise and very little factual data. What I think is most interesting to look into is the world after November 8. Let's pretend that this election comes off nice and clean and we don't dispute the results. Everything is good. Well, then what? There are two very interesting projects underway, one in Los Angeles and one in Austin, Texas. Both of these are trying to build electronic voting machines that do paper properly from scratch. The LA project, the Travis County, Austin, Texas project, both are trying to be very innovative in how they do security, how they do usability, and how they can do something at a much more reasonable cost than what the voting system company industry has been doing in the past. Those two projects, I believe, are the future. And I hope they can spread well beyond Austin, Texas and Los Angeles, California.
Dan Wallach, thank you again for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time.
Pleasure to be here.
And there you go, Patrick. It is the registration system, which I don't think people consider often enough, that is a big target. And anything that doesn't have a paper backup at this point is something to be skeptical of.
I think there is, well, I mean, to be skeptical of, I don't know if I would put it that way exactly, but certainly what is very clear out of this conversation you've had is technology is great for many things. And if you mess up a little bit, usually the worst thing that happens is that your phone's antenna isn't as good as it should be. Usually they don't explode. But in this case, I would say we shouldn't mess with this before every expert tells us it's ready. And not having paper trails, not having a paper version of the voting seems, I don't want to say suicidal, but it's inviting trouble. We're not ready for this yet. And the registration is a whole other issue, which is difficult to handle without some form of electronic database. So maybe this one could be discussed further. But I think at this stage, what comes out very clearly to me is for the voting process itself, you do need a paper version, period. Period. There is no reason to not have it. And it's not often that I will say technology shouldn't be involved 100% in something, but this I think is very clear.
Yeah, I think for the time being, that's true. I never want to say never. Perhaps there is something like the blockchain or something down the road that makes us all comfortable that, yes, there's good enough connections. But I don't think even the blockchain right now is at that point where you could rely on it. That's something for future research. And I think that's what Dan Wallach is saying, is we just really need a way to do a double check. You can do a lot of chaos right now, but as long as you have that double checking, in the end, you can be sure of your results. And I think that is the most unsettling part of this, is you get 6 million voters in Georgia voting on these electronic only machines. There are 25 counties and the city of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania that use the ES&S iVotronic voting machine, which has been demonstrated to be hackable. 58 of 67 Pennsylvania counties entirely use electronic only voting. Now, that means they're vulnerable. Your computer right now is also vulnerable to malware. It doesn't mean it's been owned. So the question becomes next for this coming election, how secure are these polling places? It's one thing to say it could be hacked under the right conditions. It's another for a person actually to be able to walk in and manipulate those votes. That happens almost never. It happens in research. That doesn't mean it can't happen. That's why Dan Wallach is out here telling people like, yeah, this is not wise. You don't want it to happen. Keep it away. But it is also easier said than done. So it's a matter of degrees. If you're a security researcher, you look at this with horror and you say, don't use that. That's risky. If you're operating a polling place, if you're someone who's going to a polling place, you just want to make sure that, you know, you keep your eyes open and you don't see anyone who seems to be hanging around looking to do something in the polling place. That said, stuff like the ES&S voting machines are particularly problematic because magnets. Somebody could just have a magnet in their pocket and disrupt them. So it's something to take seriously.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, voter fraud is always an issue, regardless of whether or not it's being done electronically. It's also important, I think, to, and I don't have the data here, but to understand how much those machines that could be potentially vulnerable would affect the overall election, if we're talking about this November 8th election, because I don't know, but I don't think it could change entirely the course of the election. Regardless, I think it at this stage, when it is possible, it would be good if the margin of the winner, whoever it ends up being, is so great that even those potentially hackable machines wouldn't have tipped it. Because if it does, then that will invite many, many questions and a mess that we don't want, which again is why you should always have paper trail at this stage of the technology.
I mean, remember in 2000, having a paper trail with hanging chads still caused issues. So you don't want to make it worse. And like you say, if you can have an election, and we won't go into electoral college and how the voting is done in the United States to elect the president, but suffice to say it's based on states more than it is on the total popular vote. If you can have an election where Georgia and Pennsylvania going one way or another doesn't swing the election either way, then yeah, you don't have as much controversy. If one of these states becomes pivotal and if recounts are done and then there's questions, that could get messy for sure. All right, let's get to our messages of the day. MAWCS said, something that keeps occurring to me when we talk about Samsung Note 7 recalls and can they survive? Will they kill the Note brand? I happen to be old enough to remember the Ford Explorer Firestone fiasco of decades past. If I'm remembering correctly, this recall and the subsequent economic disaster was the result of more than 200 people dying. Both Ford and Firestone survived just fine. I don't even remember which brand of tire under Firestone was the problem, but Ford Explorers are still sold, and so are Firestone tires. And Ford was the only American car company not to take government bailout money in the past several years. Apparently, this fiasco didn't hurt them that much. I think Samsung could see this as a minor blip in years to come.
I think there's an argument to be made that it was a different world and that it you didn't have 15,000 memes being created a minute. But I'm also walking back my eternal condemnation of the Note brand, or at least my prediction that it would never happen, simply because when I listened to the show yesterday and when I read the news that, you know, Samsung was going to put out the Note 8, Being faced with that fact made me think, well, actually, maybe the best way of saving the Note 8, the Note brand, is to put out one that doesn't explode.
Yeah,
and
maybe.
Act as normal as you can, business as usual. We have the new phone. It's awesome. It does this, this, and that. And yeah, maybe that's the best way of approaching it. And it does become a blip, or a big blip in years to come in Samsung's history.
You possible. Can make an argument that Firestone didn't survive intact. You can make an argument that, and Spooky Rich says, Ford Pintos, not so much. So, you know, there are counter arguments here as well. But the overall point is well taken that the companies can survive even worse situations. Mike in Melbourne, Australia said, hey, Tom, just thinking about the recent Internet of Things denial of service attacks. If the connected devices are able to be hacked and turned into botnets by malicious hackers, then couldn't they also be hacked into remotely and security flaws be patched? In a perfect world, I could imagine a good Internet of Things virus that roamed the internet patching vulnerable devices. I think I've heard of a similar thing at least once before. This could be done either by white hat hackers or even state-sponsored security experts. And in fact, yeah, there was a whole big thing about the CoreFlood botnet a couple of years ago where the government, the FBI, wanted to keep control of a botnet it had seized so that it could alert people that they had been infected. And even just alerting people was considered to be a controversial thing because you're keeping a botnet in existence. You're using a botnet and reinforcing it. And the only way to take advantage of these botnets would be to pay the people who run them, in which case you're financially supporting them. So I admire the idea, and it's been batted around before, but there are a lot of thorny issues, especially ethically, with doing that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating idea, honestly, and it was discussed before. Ethically, it's controversial, but I do, you know, what if it was for each manufacturer's device that the manufacturer issued some kind of firmware for that device specifically that would go and try to contact the other devices and to get them to update properly? Because we know that, you know, if we try to face reality, we know that most of those devices are not going to be.
That's just called pushing a firmware update, though. And yes, they should totally do that.
Yeah, but I mean, some of the devices aren't updated automatically, right? That you have to go and update them yourself. So you can try to
use the botnet. Yeah, I scan. It starts to get thorny, though, when the company is actually using a password, even though it's the default password that it's set, to enter someone's device without their knowledge. And
yeah, it is. But I agree. The alternative could arguably be described as worse. So I don't know.
Finally, Anthony said, hey, new listener here, just listened to yesterday's show, and I have a question. You mentioned many steps we could take to protect our smart devices from becoming bots. What can we do if our device already has this malicious software and is being used for these attacks? I have a Samsung Smart TV and a Philips Hue light set. Thanks for keeping me up to date on the tech news. Always enjoyed your segment on TMS, but just got on board with DTNS. What took me so long? I don't know, Anthony. I don't know what took you so long, but I'm glad to have you here, and it's a great question. The steps we mentioned yesterday also help if you've been infected. So, in other words, the way the bots can get access to you is by knowing your password, so change your password. If they have installed something malicious and you do a firmware update, if the firmware update's doing its job, it gets rid of the thing that's malicious. So, doing all of the steps that are proactively protecting you should also help solve the issue. And if it doesn't, you should go and contact the manufacturer and say, hey, your firmware update did not get rid of this issue, and I would contact customer support if that didn't work. If you're wondering how to tell if your connected devices are vulnerable, there is a site called IoT Scanner, iotscanner.bullguard.com. We'll have a link to the Lifehacker article about it in our show notes. And it will scan to see if your device on your network is also listed on the search engine of vulnerable devices that hackers use. There's a deep scan as well to find out if you're on that Shodan list. The deep scan isn't a great idea if you're not going to patch your things right away, because the deep scan could then list your device if it finds one that's vulnerable. So do go into that with your eyes wide open. But the main scan, the basic scan that you do right when you first get there, will at least tell you if you're listed or not. And that is it. Thank you, Patrick Beja, for joining us. Where can folks find more Patrick Beja?
You know what? I will say not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook. And I've actually posted a few things on Facebook now. Little reactions to announcements and things like that. So if you want to keep up to date on that, it could be useful. And if you're a French speaker, then you might be interested in my French language shows at frenchspin.com. I have Le Rendez-vous Tech, which talks about tech topics, and Le Rendez-vous Jeu, which is for gaming topics. We just had an episode where I told you all about the Nintendo Switch and the PlayStation VR. I'm sure you would enjoy it. That's at frenchspin.fr for the French version.
Thank you, everybody, for supporting the show. We exist because you want us to. DailyTechNewsShow.com/support is the place to go to help keep us in business. A huge thank you to every single person who supports us. And please welcome Bo Colmar and Brandon Foote, who just backed the show at patreon.com/DTNS. Thanks, y'all, for making it possible to have this show. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Jaime Ruiz Avila, the inventor of the Holovect, and Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Righty then.
Excellent.
Good show. Good show, old chaps. I'm going to have to do an edit of the full version for the patrons, because my laptop decided to update itself and cut off Alpha Geek Radio and the recording that I do for the full version, which means that I'll have everything because I've got the pre-show and the post-show, but pain in the butt. And
can you clip it from the
the
body?
Well, what I'll do is I've started a recording just now, so I will have part one, which is the MP3 from Alpha Geek Radio. I'll have the actual show MP3 that I'm working on right now. And then this third recording that I'm making right now of the post show that I'll have to stitch together.
Titles?
Yes, please.
So, Bud Drives. Get it? Like Bud Dry.
Oh, Bud Drives.
Sure. Bud drives her. Hack me, baby, one more time.
Hack me, baby, one more time.
Homeland secure. Internet of Things. Internet of Things, heal thyself. Finland, the land of the Finns and the eternal darkness. Budding driverless industry. Get it, budding. Driverless industry. All right.
Drink and don't drive. That's kind of nice.
An e-vote of confidence. Mm-hmm. Hack early, hack often.
Actually, I think it should be a voting thing, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, e-voting can't hack it.
An e-vote of confidence that can... No?
That's pretty good. I'm looking at the hack me baby one more time and thinking if we can modify it. Hack my voting one more time.
Yeah, but then you don't get it.
Hack my voting one more time. Vote my hacking one more time.
Okay, electronic votes don't recount. The electronic college.
Yeah, maybe e-voting of confidence is the best one.
So instead of the electoral college, it would be the electronic college. Yeah. Hactoral College.
E-vote of confidence question mark though, because it's not actually confident.
Yeah. I like the e-vote of confidence and then question mark, because it's a little more succinct. I vote for that. I vote for you, Pikachu.
What about you, Patrick Beja?
I think e-vote of confidence, but.
But
I'm not super. I think it's cool. I'm not like if you really want to use hack me baby one more time. I would let you do it. Is what I'm trying to say.
Oh no, I just couldn't make it work for me either, though.
Well, yeah. Basically, do you prefer TVZ Gone or Dark Redeemer?
Oh no, don't make it personal, Jesus. I can't choose. They're both pretty. Yeah, I'm so mad. Like, so the OS X update came up, and I said, try again later.
Yeah, try it again 10 minutes
and
later.
And it just rebooted. Now, maybe I clicked it wrong. Maybe it's user error. But I'm pretty sure that I said, no, I don't want to do this right now. Do it later. And then
Windows
it just
did that to me once.
Windows does it to me all the time. Dang your Windows. Beatmaster says to Patrick, don't be Ace Detect's Federline.
Ooh.
It's a deep Britney joke.
What's Federline?
Roger Federline. Isn't that an ex-boyfriend?
I don't get it.
Yeah, no, ex-husband, right?
Ex-husband of Britney Spears.
Oh, okay.
You're like, oh, that's why I don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Oops, you did it again.
You voted for that man or woman or person.
You voted with your heart.
That's the worst way to vote, honestly. Emotional voting is like buying a house on emotion. Not a good idea.
I think I'm actually going to go.
Okay, we're boring you. See, because I have to pay attention to this edit right now.
That's
maybe,
okay.
Maybe
it's
we should
half past
all go. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Let us know what you thought of having that guest segment today. Very curious about that. And we will see you later.
Bye.
Bye. Hack me, baby, one more time.